Case of the day is 11-41035. Mr. Farrell?
Good morning.
Good morning.
To please the court, opposing counsel, my name is Don Farrell, and I have the honor this morning of representing Dr. Lindell Stuckey, his wife, Lori Ann Stuckey, and the two entities that have been sued in this lawsuit, which arises out of the non-payment of an invoice for emergency veterinary services that were rendered to the appellee. This appeal is based on the trial court's dismissal of the, or refusing to take supplemental jurisdiction over the state law claims after dismissing the federal claims in this case. This court's review is based on an abuse of discretion, so the question is whether the decision to remand was based on sound legal principles. 28 U.S.C. Section 1367C provides that a court may decline supplemental jurisdiction over state law claims if there's a novel or complex issue of state law, the claim substantially predominates over the claims over which the court had original jurisdiction, all federal claims were dismissed, or there's other compelling reason for declining jurisdiction. In this case, there are no novel or complex issues of state law. State Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, intentional infliction of emotional distress claims, common law wrongful debt collection, agency and conspiracy law are all well settled in Texas. The federal claims predominated in this lawsuit. The civil rights claims were the plaintiff's primary claims. So all of the state law claims were subordinate to those claims. There were no other compelling reasons for the court to decline to take jurisdiction, but the court did dismiss all of the federal law claims.
Did you find a case where a district court was reversed for remanding remaining state law claims after disposing of the federal claims?
I did not.
I think there are some, but in those cases, usually the case, there's been a tremendous amount of discovery. The cases have been pending in the federal district court and developed for years. The trial date is set. He finally dismisses all the thing. And so it's kind of like all the work has been done, all the time that's been consumed and whatever, but they're very, very rare. It seems that just the permissive nature of it, that he may, and the discretionary discretion that he has, would make it very, very difficult to force him to take a case that he may hear, but he doesn't have to hear. You have to show that under the circumstances he had to hear it and it was an abuse of discretion for him not to hear it.
And that's what I hope we have shown through our briefs and through the record, is that this is a case where the discovery has been done, the court has heard and ruled on numerous discovery disputes, every issue.
How long had it been pending in the federal court after it was removed to the time that the judge disposed of the
Originally filed on June the 22nd of 2010, and it was removed July the 22nd of 2010, and then it was remanded on August the 30th of 2010, so approximately 14 months.
But that's from filing, but...
Oh, I'm sorry.
You would have to start from when it finally got into federal court, right?
Yes. Okay. And it was removed...
And so
removed
that was from July to...
Yes, 22nd. Mm-hmm. So about 13 months, it was ready for trial. The only thing left to do was hold a pretrial and then set it for hearing at that pretrial hearing.
There was no trial date yet?
No, that was the purpose of the pretrial, was to set the trial date. Mm-hmm. And because of the magistrate's recommendation, he rescheduled that pretrial hearing to a
I think, a future date, and prior to that date, the court remanded to state court.
Can you identify any particular difficult state law issues that a federal judge should be trying to answer on his own?
I'm sorry, I did not
understand. Was there any particular difficult state law issue that has to be resolved in this case?
I could not identify any, Your Honor.
In balancing everything, you said the discovery was done, pretrial rulings had been made. If you go into state court, what would have to be duplicated?
Well, it doesn't have to be duplicated, but from my experience, it will be duplicated. And if you look at page six of the police brief, she alludes to the fact that she is going to amend her pleadings. She is going to conduct more discovery. And I have not seen any state court that's not going to allow it. Anytime there's a continuance,
doesn't that argue against? In other words, if there's more work to be done in the case, doesn't that argue against the idea, well, the only time the federal courts abuse their discretion by remanding is when it's all been done, it's all ready. And here she's saying we need to do some more. We need to do some more discovery. So since the discovery is going to have to be done somewhere, why not in the state forum for a state claim?
Well, and the problem is that no more work needs to be done, in my opinion,
okay. But
I believe more work will be done. And I believe I'm close to out of time. And what I wanted to point out to the court that, you know, the district court, this court has to decide whether or not the district court was guided by sound legal principles. When an objection was made to the remand, the court provided us no reasoning, simply overruled all the objections and remanded with no reasoning to tell this court that any sound legal principles were used. And therefore, we have no guidance to show that the trial court used sound legal principles, and I think we have to find that it did not. Where here we are definitely complete. So we're asking that the court remand this case to the district court with instructions to exercise supplemental jurisdiction over the state law claims. I thank you for your time. I'll reserve the rest.
Ms. McCarley?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Jennifer McCarley from Culp & Dyer, and I represent the other appellate in this matter, Kenneth Del Janareth. I would like to talk a little bit about what Mr. Farrell was talking about whether or not more work needs to be done in this case. Just to give you a brief background about what this case is about, in April of 2010, Lori Stuckey went into the constable's office, located in Sanger, Texas, to file a complaint for an unpaid $400 vet bill. Before filing the complaint, Janareth made a courtesy call to plaintiff's husband, Mark Welch, who is not a party to this lawsuit, and left a message for him to call him back. 4 days later, Amy Welch called Janareth back, and they had about a 17-minute conversation about the unpaid debt. Both the message left from Mark Welch, as well as the recording of the conversation with Amy, are both recorded and part of this record. So while plaintiff is stating that she will amend her pleadings to add more causes of action, I argue that these causes of action and the state law issues are right before the district court in this matter, because there's really nothing, there's no material issue to contest here. The recordings say what they say. You can compare them to the statute, and making us go back to state court to replead and rebrief.
What is the amount in controversy?
She is claiming mental anguish damages, and the amount in controversy, she hasn't been clear on that. Last time I heard it was $33,000, but I'm not sure when we were pressing her in her deposition that's what it was. So this is not a complicated case. I'm not going to sit here and argue that we've done tons of pleadings. We have gone through the extent. But what I'm saying is that the district court is in just the same position as the state court would be to make these decisions. These aren't novel. These aren't complex. What we're doing is just wasting more time as to what the district court could determine. Moreover, and most importantly, I think that the you know, the district court listened to these recordings. They, of course, dismissed the federal claims and gave reasons for dismissing the federal claims, and they decided not to retain supplemental jurisdiction over the state law claims.
If you were a judge in this case and you were writing the opinion, how would you write it so that judges retain discretion to remand state law claims once they have resolved all the federal law claims without being in a broad mandate to say, okay, you really don't have much discretion?
I think I would write the opinion to state that the same, that since this isn't a complicated case and they have briefed the issues before the federal court, and already the federal courts made decisions that actually impact the state court issues. So if you go back to state court, there is a possibility that you're going to relitigate issues that have already been decided by this court.
That's going to be true in a lot of cases. I mean, so what kind of, how do we draw lines so that district courts retain discretion?
In other words, what particular factors are involved here that would compel us to do it that wouldn't compel the future panels to go ahead and force the district judges to keep all these cases?
I mean,
the standard is, it's fairly standard for federal judges to remand state claims after they dispose of federal claims.
And I understand that. And my argument would be was, one, these don't contain novel or complex issues of state law. And more importantly, for the common law factors of judicial economy, all this is doing is recreating redundancy back down to the state court. So we're going to refile our pleadings. We're going to possibly, there'll be more causes of action acclaimed. We still, the only things in controversy are the two recordings. You know, there is a redundancy, and as far as, you know, there's also
redundancy can't be the deciding factor. Otherwise, you can never remand.
Understood. I would definitely say then also fairness to the parties. These issues have already been litigated. I'll give you a prime example of it. Plaintiff asked for injunctive relief that stated that she wanted to prohibit Mr. Janareth from engaging in debt collection without being bonded under the Texas Finance Code. The Texas Finance Code only requires third-party debt collectors to be bonded. A third-party debt collector under the Texas Finance Code is defined as someone who is a debt collector under the FDCPA. The district court ruled that Janareth is not a debt collector as defined by the FDCPA.
And then why isn't that a binding, collaterally estopping, if not res judicata finding?
I think it would be, but at the same time, I'm afraid if we reopen discovery or, you know, I just feel like it's already been decided, so why not decide it at the district court level where it's already in play? Moreover, there were other facts that the court decided. They decided that they didn't arrest, that Janareth didn't threaten to arrest the plaintiff, that he told her that she was not in trouble. You know, he merely told Welch what she could do, i.e. that, you know, or what Lori Secchi could do, i.e. file a lawsuit or possibly theft of service charges. The findings that this court made, I think, will impact it. And if we get back down to state court, correct, I can make a collateral estoppel and res judicata argument. Doesn't necessarily mean that it will be successful. It doesn't necessarily mean that it will go forward. What we're doing, my main argument is that the district court is in just as good a position as the state court without any novel or complex issues of state law. We'd already filed our pretrial disclosures. We'd already filed our jury instructions for the federal court. We were 1 month away, or not even 1 month, we were 2 weeks away from having a pretrial hearing. This case had gotten to a point where it was at a position to be decided on, and now we're going to go back to state court and be in the exact same position, but the federal court actually has more familiarity with it.
Well, I've never seen a case that has lasted this short amount of time as this where we said the district judge has abused his discretion. All the cases, there were 3 years, they were already, this one hadn't even had a pretrial yet. It just seems to me, and I understand the contention that one, at least as to one of the claims, may have been fairly simple. But I just don't see how, if we say this is abuse of discretion, how we're not forcing the federal district judges to retain jurisdiction, when we have told them that the normal rule will be that they remand, that the that's what normally we will approve of.
I would point to the Brookshire case, Brookshire Brothers versus Daco Products. It's at 554 F3D 595. It's a 2009 decision out of this court. While that court did have, I believe they did have a lot of pleadings that had been pending for a while. The discovery had closed and the parties were making final preparations for trial, just as we are in this case. But one of the points that they emphasized in that case was that there was a potential for relitigating issues that had already been decided against the plaintiff. And I believe that's the same issue that's in front of the court today. I see that my time's up. If you have any more questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Good morning. My name is Chris Race. I represent the plaintiff in this matter, or the appellee. It appears y'all have a lot more questions. I prepared a lot of this, but Judge Benavides, I believe you are correct that the great bulk of the cases have been on the docket for a much longer period of time, have much more money, time, effort expended in them. The Brookshire case that Ms. McCarley just cited was not even in her brief. It was in the Stuckey's brief. They had 1,300 entries. We've got 90 here. They had 41 dispositive motions. They had 14 Dalbert motions, and they had 7 motions in limine, none of which is before this court.
Let me ask, had discovery been completed under the district court's order?
Yes. Okay. Yes, it had. And I'm sorry.
And so that had been completed. Certainly the concern of where that opens back up with a new judge. What about difficult state law issues? What would you identify that a federal district judge shouldn't be trying to decide that's a state law issue?
I'm glad you asked that. The biggest issue here is, can a law enforcement officer, without a case pending in his, I guess, jurisdiction, court, place calls to people to say you need to pay your debt? That's a novel issue. There's not a case on it, or I would have cited it with regards to the motions for summary judgment that were actually filed in district court. There is no case on that. I think that's a big one, and the Texas Fair Debt Collection Practice Act, as opposed to the federal, is broader. Ms. McCarley, I think she keeps wanting the court's interpretation to be that you have to be a debt collector under the federal act, and the court actually found against that. That's not true under the Texas Act.
How much do you say is the amount in controversy?
My client testified in her deposition to $33,000 in terms of mental anguish. The debt originally collected for, the underlying debt, which
$400?
Yes, it was minimal. The problem I have with the novel area is, and quite honestly, the relitigation probably will be from the defendants or the appellants here, with regards to they're going to want to revisit that immunity issue. I've maintained since day one that I sued Mr. Janareth in his individual capacity, not his official capacity, because he cloaked himself in that office, made calls from that office. But I'm thinking there will be more litigation on that point, not necessarily anything I'm going to try to relitigate. And yes, I will admit I'm probably going to have to update my pleadings, because we've been pending for over a year, and there are factual events that I want to put in my pleading, and I may or may not want to take out a cause of action, not put any new causes of action in. The judicial economy part of this is all over the map. There are cases that are pending a great length of time. The case cited in Enix, which is a 2011 case out of this circuit, had been pending approximately the same time this case had. And this court allowed that situation to, they actually reversed the court for maintaining jurisdiction. And their quote is, the courts in this circuit must remain diligent in following the Supreme Court's almost 50-year-old command that federal courts avoid needless decisions of state law. That's the Enix decision. It's cited in my brief. I believe that's pretty much the controlling decision. Most of these cases, Smith, that's cited in the Stuckey brief, summarily discusses these elements. Sibley, that's an interesting one, because they actually had a full trial. A motion for new trial was filed and granted. A motion for summary judgment was then filed and granted. And then the remand took place. And this court, without a great deal of discussion, said that was okay. So I don't think that whether discovery's been completed or what the stage of trial setting was necessarily has a great deal of application based on the Sibley case. The rest of the factors, I think, I disagree that there is no novel issue. I believe that the debt collection by a law enforcement officer is something that really needs to be decided under the Texas Collection Act, not necessarily by a federal court. I think that that's where we get into the comedy concerns. I think that the state court needs to make that decision, not a federal court sitting on supplemental jurisdiction. The convenience of the parties, clearly, I mean, we are, everybody's in debt. Everybody's in one location. If there is any further litigation, anything that has to be done, I think everything dictates under the factors set forth in Enix, and I would like to address one issue with Enix. Enix brings up a question of forum shopping, and you don't really see that in the rest of the opinions. They also bring in a prejudice issue just in one little sentence, and I'm not sure exactly anybody can show any level of prejudice, and it's my position that if anyone could be characterized here as form shopping, it's the appellants, because they want to go back to federal court where, essentially, frankly, they've been kicking my tail all over the place. They asked for the summary judgment. They got the summary judgment based on the way the judge ruled it gets remanded. They asked for this, essentially, and now they want to go back. If you have any further questions, I'm here to answer them, but I'm going to give the time back.
Thank you, counsel. We have your argument.
Thank you.
Your Honors, the appellee brings up the point that the novel issue is whether a constable can be held to be a debt collector. That's not the question. That's not what the law states under the Texas Fair Debt Collection Act. The question is, did the conduct amount to debt collection so that you are a debt collector, whether you're a fireman, nurse, or whoever? The question always boils down to the conduct that was conducted. That is well-settled law in Texas. It's not a novel question. Justice Owen, you asked the question, how would you write this brief? Or rather, write this opinion. And I would look to the Brookshire Brothers case, the Amedesis case, the Batiste case, where it says that if you've conducted your discovery, you're ready for trial, there's little left to do but trial, then that's where you draw the line. Otherwise, you're punishing those who efficiently get to trial if you try to set some time limit and say, well, okay, 3 years. Well, I know some counsel that can't get past depositions in 3 years. So it needs to be a situation, as this court has already laid out, where if you're almost there, you're ready for trial, then that's time to go ahead and decide the case. There's no point in getting there and then kicking it back and having somebody else start over. Appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Your Honors, I just want to address a couple of issues that were raised by the appellee in this matter. As far as the immunity issue, the court didn't decide the immunity issue. They didn't decide the qualified immunity issue because they looked at the record, they listened to the tapes, and decided that it could be ruled on its merits. It didn't have to even address the qualified immunity. So are we going to re-raise that in state court? Of course we are. But my contention is that just listening to the tapes and looking at the statutes and reading what the standards are, any court would be able to decide that this is not, there's no merits to the claims. Again, plaintiff wants to characterize this as, it hasn't been pending long. It's not, and I agree that it has not been pending as long as some of the other case. But again, it's not a complicated case.
But aren't you changing the rule and all the careful recitation in Brookshire to why the length, why you had an abuse of discretion is all gone now, and it just becomes, if it's simple and the discovery is over, then the district court needs to keep it, when we start out with the premise that generally the federal court should remand.
And I understand that, but I think you have to take it in a totality, and the court does make it clear that it's on a case-by-case basis. So you have to take in the totality of what are the claims, what have we already decided, and do those decisions impact the state court decisions? Does it make more sense for this court to retain jurisdiction and go ahead and decide the case, or does it make more sense for it to be back down to state court because there are novel or complex issues of state law, or because this case is not at a point where it's ripe enough for a decision? I believe that those factors should weigh in favor of this case. I think it is factually distinct from the Brookshire case, but I think in the way that you weigh the factors of, you're right, there were not a ton of judicial resources committed to this, but this case doesn't warrant a ton of judicial resources committed to it. It doesn't warrant that type of attention. And I think if you look at, if you just listen to the recordings and you understand what's really at stake in this case, sending us back down to state court will waste what the federal court has already done, but it will just be a repeat step in state court.
Thank you, counsel.